Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to the Legend of Rouge Cycling Podcast for the Amstel Gold Race men and women's recaps. The women's race finished quite early today, although there was a change in parkour and delayed. But the men's race just finished at 4:45. And this episode is brought to you by our show partner, Join Cycling. The men's race began in Maastricht and finished in Bergen te Bleet. This is in the hilly south little pocket of the Netherlands, near Maastricht, obviously, with the border of, Luke will correct me if I'm wrong, border of Belgium and Germany, in this triangle. Maybe Luxembourg somewhere near, who knows? And it's a hilly parkour, obviously, not as hilly. Or the hills aren't as long, rather, as Liège-Bastogne-Liège next Sunday, but they're of decent length too. And to be honest, if you ask me, why is this an Ardennes race, and why and has different winners to say the Tour of Flanders? I actually don't know the answer to that, because when I look at the hills and the length of time, I don't know the answer. To be honest, maybe the lack of cobbles suits the lighter riders more. I don't know. But you have things like the Kauberg, yeah.
Is it controversial to say that Amstel Gold Race is basically Dwars-door-Vlaanderen, but every climb doesn't have the cobbles?
Yeah, it kind of, all the climbs are that sort of length, like 500 to, or 300 to 800 meters, yeah. Or a K, about 4 to 7, 8%, some harder, some a bit easier, like the Iserbosveg, 900 meters with a 15% 300 meter pinch at the end. Or the Göteborg, 1.1k, yep. 7% with a hard start to it, and then it levels off to 4% the last 500 meters. It is quite similar. The finish, though, is not as difficult as, say, yep. The Kwamont-Paderberg combination. Instead, they do the Kauberg, then cross the finish line, descend, and then there's no Kauberg in the last 14 kilometers in the men's race, which is different to a lot of the editions Philippe Gilbert won. Back in the day. Instead, they do the Hoylemmerberg, however you say it, and the Bemmelerberg, which is not that difficult, before a sort of, false flat finish in a sprint finish, honestly. Not even as difficult as the Esbocht finish in Brabant on Wednesday. So, hilly course, MVP $2 favorite to start. Benji Schelmoser here for Trek, as well as Skuins. Pidcock, the leader for Ineos, but Kwiatkowski won this race in 2022. Pog won last year. No Pog here. So a good start list. A good start list. Who's in the early break? Actually, Tour de Tietema. We should give them a shout out, right?
Yeah, exactly. They're riding their first World Tour race here. Their ultimate goal is being at the start of the Tour de France, but I feel like Amstel Gold Race is the first step for them, because there's not many Dutch World Tour races. We're talking about one, which is the Amstel Gold Race. And it's kind of that race that you have to kind of benefit from the French country politics of trying to get a wild card for that team in that race. So to see them at the start, pretty cool to see. They're present in that breakaway with Zeb Kiffin, who is riding his first World Tour race as well. Alexander Hayak also in the breakaway for Bora, Enzo Lijnse for DSM, and Tosh van der Sande for Visma, which could be useful if he can get further on in the race as some kind of satellite rider. But it's a bloody long race, this race. And I'll be honest, when it comes to this parkour, yes, it opened up very early last year with Pogacar being in the group with for example, Van der Sande last year, with some other riders like Healy and so forth in the group as well. But I still feel like in other editions, it always opens up late because you have that Kruisberg to Keutenberg vibe in the last 37 to 28 kilometers to go, where it's really the position to kick it off, the point to kick it off, and the 40 kilometers beforehand is kind of, there's not much to do. So you either get ahead before that or reduce Alpecin's control before that, or you're stuck until you get to the Kruisberg, to the Keutenberg. And we saw some teams trying to move early. To be clear, breakaway gets caught, get rid of them, in this race. Kauberg, 81 kilometers to go. Bora's doing some stuff. Bob Jungels tries to go. We see some other riders trying to follow, and we see the first anticipation moves in. We see Axel Oras being very present in trying to close that down. I think Hermans was present as well in doing so. So Alpecin was doing the kind of thing where they were jumping in groups and not working with the group because they know their riders in that group could probably beat a Jungels. Like, I would take Axel Oras over Bob Jungels on this parkour. Would you?
Yeah, definitely. Laurent's got a really, really good sprint. He's come more recently podiumed big one-day classics like Britannia Classic against Van Aert & Co. from memory. That was even when he was on B&B Hotels. Yeah. So he's got... It's like when... it's what Alpecin were doing in the Tour of Flanders. I can't remember who jumped and they put a rider. Maybe it was Laurent himself that jumped in the Tour of Flanders as well, and they were riding in a similar fashion where you don't get put in a position where you're having to chase all the time. You're staying in good position and then jumping, and then you can say, oh, well, Trek over to you, Ineos over to you, because Ineos helped control the brakes, so they put the marker down that they were the big favourites at least. But Ineos, in the end, were right to be confident. I mean, they... Apart from Kwiatkowski, maybe, but he doesn't even look that good at the moment. Like, it's fair enough to go all in for Pidcock, and I think that made their strategy pretty straightforward as well. But before we get into where the action really or started to kick off with about 60Ks to go, where teams really started to get ahead, mention our show partner, Join Cycling. I'm in the midst of my Fabio Jakobsen sprint training plan. Either tomorrow or Tuesday, I have uphill sprints, which is convenient because all around my house is uphill. I've been doing some sort of over-unders. I think they're called Steigerungs. Luke will know what that means because he speaks German. I'm not sure if it's... maybe we just call it over-unders in English. But like step-down intervals, where starting at VO2 for 90 seconds, then 2.5 minutes at threshold, then 4 minutes at tempo, 4 reps of 8. That was probably my favorite workout I did this week. I really, really enjoyed that one. And then tootling around basically in between, not tootling around, zone two, in between those intervals. And to be honest, even though I'm having to adjust the plan here or there, whether a bit of extra work comes up or I can't do that many hours that day or whatever happens, just even having Join adapt to my lack of flexibility and having to move, say, I don't know if I can train tomorrow, but then I'll do it on Tuesday, but still being able to do the sessions means that I'm probably the strongest I've been for at least 5 years, which I'm super happy about, especially as I'm now the wrong side of 30, Benji, in case people didn't know. So if you want to try out Join Cycling yourself, you can go through the link down below to get 30 days free, no credit card required, no strings attached. And then there is a 6-month discounted subscription that will be offered at the end of that 30-day trial period. Paul Lapeyre, I think he used Join, Benji. That guy's flying.
Yep, that guy is definitely flying. And you said it. There's that phase with between like 60 kilometers ago to 40 kilometers ago before the Kreisberg where there's not much on the terrain to work with. But I also feel like Vermeers already being out of the race, looking at the other riders that are still in the group for Alpecin, I feel like a lot of work came down to Laurens and Hermans trying to close anticipation moves of the likes of Quickstep. Pervaka was doing a lot. EF was doing quite a bit of attacks. Decathlon was doing quite a bit of attacks. And you said it, Lapeyre is in a group with Pervaka and Honoré there. And those two riders are up the road, which means that you get this face of those riders being up the road while we see some counterattacks behind, some trying to control when it comes to Vanderpool. But I just saw a lack of Alpecin riders at that point. I thought there would be more. That's how I felt at this point in the race. And we go towards the Hulpeterbergweg, which was a climb where I didn't really expect much to happen. But we do see Kwiatkowski in the peloton moving up and moving on to the climb first. And small gap behind him. It was like a gap that opened up just before the climb. Not sure if it was on purpose or not. And Vanderpool closed that himself on the climb. And I'm like, isn't this what you want to avoid at this point in the race? Don't you, as Alpecin, want to try and control it until you get 2, 3, maybe 4 climbs in into this phase of the race? Maybe you try and go on the Kürtenberg segment. And before that, you want to have a team that is able to control the counterattacks from other riders at this point, and you don't want to make that move yet yourself. But do you think it came from a place of, ooh, I'm starting to get isolated myself, so I need to start worrying and doing shit myself?
To be honest, at the time, I thought it was like he was warming up, because why would you close Kwiatkowski? Normally, if you look at how Vanderpool rode all the other monuments, he focuses on maximum two guys who he must close. Yeah. So RVV, it was Jorgensen and Pedersen. Roubaix, it was Pedersen. Milan-San Remo, it was Pogacar. And so Kwiatkowski doesn't meet that criteria, even on his own, even on Ineos. Pidcock, the two people he would probably mark would be Pidcock, Jorgensen, and Schkelmoser, not Kwiatkowski. But then I thought, maybe he's just warming up and he wants to go on the Kotaberg and he just wants to open the legs up. I don't know. Because, yeah, like, the way his legs have been, Benji, sometimes actually his tactics haven't been the best, or in like Van Vevelhem, but in Roubaix and Tour of Flanders, like, it doesn't matter what your tactics are if you're that much better than everybody.
And in this specific race, you then go towards the next climbs, Kreisberg, Fromberg, and we start getting those counterattacks. We still have Honoré Lapeyre at the front. They have dropped Vervaeke at this point, but we see a counterattack of, for example, Hirschi with Van Sevenant, Roger Adria, Bauke Mollema, Madouas, Pacher. Second group that tries to form up on the road, they get a bit of a gap. Then a third group tries to form with, I think, Coron that tries to get away and so forth. And that group does not really get away. But what was very visible for me is, at this point, there is no Alpecin anymore.
Yeah.
They were trying to control on the Kreisberg. They weren't there anymore when it comes to the Fromberg. Van der Poel is still there. But the fact that he's not there with the first anticipation can be like, okay, he missed that one. Second one, you might want to start reacting now, because otherwise you're going to have a group of 10 ahead. Third one, still not reacting. That was worrying for me. We weren't even at the Kurtenberg yet. And I was starting to worry a little bit about Van der Poel, which is unusual this year.
Well, I think Pidcock realized that too, because as I said, like, if you follow how his patterns, Jorgensen jumped with I don't know who, and Vanderpool didn't react at all. In fact, he slid to the back of the group. And I think Pidcock would have been mentally thinking, he can't be that good. Because, like, yeah, as you said, okay, Honoré and Lapeyre, whatever, Ineos are going to close it. But still, you don't know exactly. And you got to remember, Vanderpoel closed that group of Van Baarle, Benoot, Pedersen in Tour of Flanders. He closed like a 20-second gap like it was nothing, and then still won the race. There's Bling on the front. And I was thinking, Bling's got to jump, Benji. Yeah. This is the moment to jump, because there are no Alpecin Domestique. It's flat or rolling terrain without any seriously high climb. I think we're still before the Kaltenberger this phase, which is the hardest maybe climb in the final. And it's kind of like, if you don't jump here, you're going to miss it, or you're going to be left chasing. And some teams did and some teams didn't. I didn't see how it actually happened, but the decisive jump across to the FDJ, Mollema, Adria, Van Sevenant, Hirschi group, who are catching Honoré and Lapeyre, the decisive jump was Vokala, Pidcock, and Benoot. And then when MVDP didn't go with those three, you know for sure he doesn't have his best legs. Because at least if Ineos are not up ahead, Kwiatkowski will still pace. But now Visma and Ineos are going ahead, he mustn't have good legs to not follow. Pidcock's the second favorite for the race. And that was really smart from Pidcock. Actually thinking in the race, he doesn't have it, or I can get ahead here.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe it wasn't something he actively thought about, but just was like, let me kick the fan and see what happens. But it worked out well, because that forms that 12-man group. And also Bilbao was able to get into that group. I actually didn't see how Bilbao got to that group. That's the one rider I missed in like the way he got to the front. But you said all the names. Hirschi, Honoré, Pidcock, Benoot, Van Sevenant, Adria, Mollema, Lapeyre, who benefited from being ahead, Lapeyre. So props there, Honoré as well, is in this group because they were ahead. Vokala, Madouas, Pacher, Bilbao. I really enjoyed seeing all the French riders in there, especially Lapeyre and Vauquelin after the years and, well, in case of Lapeyre, months of hyping up. In the case of Vauquelin, now a year and a half of hyping up. To see him in this situation where you'd hope to see those riders, that's great. I was missing someone like Greguardo, but then again, that team is there with two riders, with Madouas and Pacher, so they can't complain either. And we're heading towards the Kurtenberg, 28.5 kilometers to go roughly. And I'm thinking, okay, this is one of the last chances for Van der Poel to really respond, because the timer at the top, I didn't really trust it fully, but it went from like 20 seconds to 45 seconds, then went down a little again, well, it went up a little again, and we came at the climb with a solid gap. You're muted, my friend.
Oh, I'm muted. I'm still learning this podcasting business, Benji. I was checking where Tom Schoens was finished, because I wanted to go on a rant about that. I will come back to that. But yeah, they didn't show the peloton for like 3-4 minutes. I was thinking, where can we trust these gaps? Why can't they show the peloton? Where's the motorbike gone? And the answer was, no one was really pacing in the peloton. Israel weren't there. They needed to be there. And actually, this was where Trek, I think, really lost the chance to podium this race. Because you got the hardest climb. You got Schelmose as a puncher, pure puncher. And instead, they've used Schoens, who dropped Van Aert on the Barendries. Mm-hmm. They've used Schoens as a domestique, and then put Mollema in a group ahead that he probably can't podium from. Almost definitely can't podium from. And then they don't move on the Koteberg because they're protecting Mollema ahead.
And they were actually controlling the race a little bit as well in the neutral, in the middle zone of the phase, together with Alpecin, if I remember correctly. So I agree. Tactically, probably not the best race. It was nice seeing Mollema at this level, though. I will say because didn't expect him to be there. I thought
you're really going to control.
Contract.
You're really going to control, like you're the race favorites, to put Mollema in a group with Pidcock and he or she, and not give Schoens a chance. Yeah. So, and Schoens, I don't know, maybe he wasn't in good shape. I don't know, but you want to at least have two in the group, Schoens with Mollema, then you can do something, not just Mollema. But yeah, basically on the Koteberg, I think that's the one they had the sign on shot. Yeah. He or she jumps. Benoit goes over the top of him with like 60 RPM grinding. It looks like they're going to create a split of the strongest three or four riders, but in the end, it actually stays together. But you already could see that Benoit, Hirschi, Pidcock, and Maori were the strongest four on that climb. You already can see, and that means that will probably be repeated on the next climbs.
Mate.
And you can forget the peloton just about now.
Exactly. And when Hirschi made that move, and I saw, sorry, but Maori von Sevenan looked like he was plowing his bloody field, trying to follow any attack that happened on the Koteberg. He was going from left to right. I swear his head made movements from the left side of the road.
Is he not?
I don't think you plow cows.
So why is he plowing a field?
We don't get into farmer details on this podcast.
Actually, I don't know what he farms. Dalee is a dairy farmer, right?
I have absolutely no clue.
You should know.
They're just merely farmer sons from Belgium, my friend.
Dalee not from Flanders, though.
It's all the same. Anyway, peloton 1 minute, you said it. It feels like it's gone, but you never know with 2019 in your head. Maybe Van der Poel is like, maybe he's still following Kwiatkowski from that first climb, and maybe he still has to realize that he shouldn't follow Kwiatkowski there. But on a serious note, Calvet is coming, 18K to go. Hirschi pushes again on there. Lapera looking strong in the wheel. Peloton on 40 seconds here, because we saw EF now controlling in the group behind. And at first I was like, okay, Carapaz is spacing for Healy. Then I saw Healy come to the front and was like, Healy spacing for Carapaz? No, because Carapaz was just to the front. And then I realized Marijn van den Berg is still in this race. But it was going to be difficult. And while attacks do happen behind in the peloton as well, MVDP once again very passive here. Schelmose was, I think, the one that really made the bigger hit on the Kauberg again, but no major differences made there. And then I look at the end of the Kauberg, and we see in the group at the front someone attack, and it's a typical move, huh? Pebble-Bau going on the descent of the Kauberg instead of the climb itself makes a gap, but the gap is not large enough, and Pidcock does decide to kind of already go after him in the descent itself, which means that by the time they reach that next climb, the Hulgemerberg, we got Pidcock and Hirschi catching Wilbao, Maori closing with the rest in the wheel, and that's where another decisive split happens, right? Of four riders?
The same four. They go clear, Hirschi, Benoit, Pidcock, Van Sevenant, Hirschi skipping sometimes and then pulling. Benoit's now pulling again. Benoit wasn't pulling when it was the group of 10 or 8 guys, but now with the group of 4 he pulls, probably because the breakaway is confirmed. And in the peloton, you've got, it's just really I think Lotto and Antimarché even move up a rider to pace for maybe Lorenzo Rota, I think. And Group 2 actually doesn't go away too far. Group 2 doesn't collapse completely. In fact, it keeps working pretty well, and that's a function of it having two teammates who are strong in there, Madouaz and Pascher. Because it's two teammates, they just keep investing, probably Pascher, and it never gets to the point where Group 1 can just fully start playing a game in the last 3Ks, because Group 2 is right there, and even Lapeira was trying to close it himself. But in the end, I think there's one anticipation from Pidcock, which I thought was interesting, that he tried to jump on like a flat bit, because I was thinking that has to be Benoit or Maori.
He saw Paul Lapeira in his back mirror and said, oh, no, this man want to sprint in Basque Country. This man is going to kill us at the finish line. Let's go. And he went on left, and I feel like it was a late reaction though by the rest, right? It was that kind of attack of like, oh, he's attacking. Oh, he's got a bit of a gap. Let's respond now. But eventually, they got caught up. Again, I think Benoit was the one closing it down eventually, together with Hirschi. Hirschi first, then Benoit has to take over because otherwise Pidcock is gone, and then closes it, and then they come back together. Maori was in the most trouble, I would say, in this last 10 kilometers. He was dropping every now and then, especially with the Pidcock attack, but came back. And at this point, the peloton was definitely out of the race. The second group, in the last 2 kilometers, looked to come a bit closer, as there was some cooperation mishaps every now and then in the last two kilometers especially, but the gap was enough to have a sprint between four riders, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I was saying it's not really hard to finish at all, because there's no moment for, because Benoit's not going to back himself against Hirschi or Pidcock in the sprint. Maori certainly not, one would think. And so there really was then, after Pidcock's anticipation, moment for them to jump. And so it goes to the sprint. Maori gets on the front. He pulls basically to make sure they stay away. And Benoit opens up from fourth wheel around the outside, trying to get the jump on Pidcock and Hirschi. And if he was able to get in front, he probably could have closed them or boxed them.
Yeah.
But he wasn't able to. Pidcock jumps early enough to the left of Maori, gets along on the barriers, and then Hirschi comes through again on the inside. But Pidcock, clearly the snappiest, well-timed, wins Amstel Gold Race ahead of Mark Hirschi. Tejs Benoit third, Maori van Sevenot fourth, Lapeira. They finished on the same time. So there was pressure from behind with Lapeira, Madouaz, Mollema, Pascher, Bilbao. They are all riders from that move that went with 30, 40Ks to go. And they finish in the top nine. Matthews wins the bunch sprint behind for 10th, which he's just got to be more active, Benji.
Yeah.
And you cannot say, but they won't let him go. I'm sorry. Pidcock jumped. Pidcock jumped. The second race favorite.
Yep. Fully agree. And it's not just him, eh? We've got other riders in the group where Lotto completely missed a split at that point as well. And Kroon tried, but he wasn't good enough. Van Gels, I didn't really see in this phase of the race. So whether it was injury-wise still from the past, or he just wasn't good enough, who knows? But I was hoping to see more of them as well in that phase. And there's just so many teams that missed that split towards the end. Even Israel had to pace a long time as well, because they didn't have that rider up there that they wanted up there. And that's a bummer for them. But I'll be honest, it was a really good race. And Pidcock winning Amstel for the second time after his glorious victory against Wout van Aert a few years ago. It's good to see justice for Pitters today. And this time, at least with the men's race, no finish photo, no finish drama in total, which feels like a victory for this race.
Yeah, it's good to see, a clear winner. And also an interesting race for the last hour. I thought it was really, really interesting. The way there was the jumping and who's missing it, who's chasing. Vandenberg, though, that's the curious thing, what he finishes 11th. I swear there was an EF rider that crashed into a barrier. I don't know who that was. Maybe it can't have been Vandenberg, right? Because it was him. Luke says it was him.
Yep.
So he's done very well to pick himself up off the ground and still finish second in the bunch sprint behind.
I didn't realize that. That's fucking good.
Yeah, maybe he must have. Mustn't have been too banged up, and he's in very, very good shape. Any other notes to pick out? I would say you can't disagree with how FDJ raced. Decathlon were active again. Quickstep were nice and active. I think EF and Trek probably a bit disappointed because, well, EF missed. Oh, no, EF had the, like, Trek Benji, they fell into the we're represented fallacy, and then the other guys switched off in the group behind. And what I'm talking about is Honore's one of the first guys that jumps with Lapira, and then when there's the, okay, the second move jumps with maybe second-tier guys, Ruja, Adria, and Pasha, no offense, or whoever. And but then when the third guy groups are jumping, Pidcock, Jorgensen, Benoit, those sort of guys, then you have to have Healy there, or you have to have Carapaz there, or you have to have Schoens or Schelmoser there. Because, again, you can't be like, well, we're already represented, we'll just block it up. It's like, no, they're going to get across and your guy's going to get killed.
Fully agree. I will add on to that, that I do appreciate how they switched behind from Healy and Carapaz until the top of the Kauberg, and then switch, we're gonna ride all out with everybody for Marijn van den Berg.
That was good, yeah.
I like that, but I fully agree that they should have been ahead in the first place.
Especially with Healy, like, how good he was last year, you know? Like, he dropped Pidcock here last year from, that's right. Yeah, he dropped him here. So, I think they were a bit too confident that Honore could do well from that group.
And another point that I want to highlight is that Amstel is also one of those races where, I'll be honest, I don't wake up in the morning of January 1st and think, oh, I'm looking forward to the Amstel Gold Race. It's not that kind of race for me. This is Dutch Nokere Koerse. But anyway.
Luke's going to shut down the stream.
But I will say, I love seeing the growth of young riders that come to the forefront in these kind of races. Brabant's Amstel Gold Race, you had with Healy last year. But now with seeing Lapera up there, seeing Vauquelin, that group, seeing Grégoire getting 12th as well, Vito Brad really stepping up. That's the vibe I'm looking for when it comes to the Amstel Gold Race. And yeah, that's why I like this race more than Nokere Koerse. Hey, look, I'm getting my points back.
I mean, it's just any race where Jonas, Hogg or Van der Poel aren't in top shape and win easily is always going to be a good race. So
Ciclismo.
Pidcock it's only his fifth pro win, but when he wins, he generally wins big. Strada, Tour de France stage, now the Amstel Gold Race.
But
I would say this is the biggest win of Pidcock's career.
In terms of
quality of competition beat, no offense to Louis Mankies and post Sky Froome, but he won Amstel with perfect tactics and being super strong today.
Well, firstly, I'm still in the camp that I believe Pidcock won before on Amstel, but if you're not in that camp, then I agree if you don't believe, then you're still in the camp of okay, yes, this is his biggest win, but it feels like a partial decision that he doesn't win that much, because he could win a lot more if he went for stage and races more than GC, for example. But that's also the consequence of being this level rider at the start of your road career.
Look at his schedule this year. Okay, Algarve, he was there for probably TT and GC practice, and his sprint was a little bit disappointing, I would say, on a couple of the stages, but that's not a World Tour race and it's not a main target, so it doesn't matter. But then you look at the rest of his schedule, Omloop against the Visma, like full Classics team before everyone crashed and got sick, Strade against Pog, Tirreno against Jonas in top shape, San Remo against Pog and Van der Poel with no Ganna in support, or maybe, no, Ganna was there, I apologize. Ganna was there, in good shape, he just punctured. Basque Country, he was going to be against Jonas, Rog and Remco before he crashed. Then he did Roubaix, and now Amstel, the first race he probably is at least a top three favorite for, maybe apart from Strade, he wins.
Exactly.
So his schedule's, if you do a strength of schedule rating like they do in baseball or basketball, his schedule is unbelievably difficult.
Yeah.
And looks good.
He won, so I'm happy for him, to be honest. I was looking forward to...
I'm not saying
that's
wrong either. Like, you should send your best rider to the best races.
I agree, but I also am of the opinion that I would have liked seeing him riding a Dwarsdorf Vlaanderen or something, or even a Brabantse Pijl this week. Because while you do want those World Tour victories, I feel like Pidcock can also deliver you victories in general, which Ineos kind of desperately need. But anyway, it's another World Tour victory for them after Carlos Rodriguez, so that's very nice to see. And I don't know, I don't have much more to say outside of there's always this discussion when Strade Monuments blah blah comes up. Oh, Amstel's older and should deserve it more, but this race was boring until 35 kilometers to go and then was amazing. So this is not a monument race, you know?
Well, Roubaix was not interesting the whole time.
Well, yeah, but most of the editions of Roubaix are interesting.
Yeah, but I would say that Amstel is generally a pretty good race, I would say.
I agree.
But that's not even a criteria. I still don't know what a monument is, so...
Yeah, nobody knows.
I don't know what that means. It's just people made it up one day. Like, not even that far in the past. They just made it up, so...
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yeah, congrats to Ineos. And I would say Ineos riders are in better shape than their win tally suggests. I would say a lot of their riders are actually pretty strong at the moment. Anyway, we're going to go into the women's race now, which also I think had a pretty entertaining final at least, although there was some, it was 158 kilometers, well, supposed to be 158 kilometers, from Maastricht again to Bergen to Blaet, featuring the Bemelerberg, Kouwberg, but unlike the men's race, this does finish. Is this the old style finish? The old men's and women's finish?
Yes.
It has the Kouwberg 500 meters, 9.4%, and then 3Ks to finish. It is. Okay.
It is the old style finish as the last, the Kouwberg finish and so forth, but it got heavily changed today. Because while we started the race, yes, breakaway goes up the road, Anna Kneinenberg, she gets caught with 110Ks to go, so the pressure is on in this race from the peloton to keep close to whatever happens, and then race neutralized. There was a police motorcyclist that was injured in a collision with a car on one of the roads that was on the Amstel Gold Race. That police motorcycle was supervising the route. I don't know what happened there, what the outcome is for the police motorcyclists, but let's hope that person is relatively well off considering what happened. But because of that, one of the roads was closed off and they had to adapt the parkour on the go, which credits to the organization of how fast they acted. But unfortunately, it does reduce the race a lot because the decision was we're going to neutralize the race and ride towards the local circuit, but we're only going to do 3 laps of it, which makes it a significantly, in between brackets, easier and less selective parkour. Does that make sense?
Yeah, exactly. It makes a sprinter more likely to survive the final. And Luke said, when I was like, how is this race so much harder than RVV? It has 50, he said the men's race at least has 50% more elevation gain in the parkour than the Amstel men's has 50% more elevation than the RVV men's. So to your point, now applying that to the women's, now you take out some of those Ks.
Yeah.
Lorena Wiebes is looking much more of an option. So the SD Works Pro Time sent that team here with Valerin Kopecky, Bredevold Wiebes. Bredevold also the European champion. Very, very strong team. And it doesn't help probably riders like Kasia Nuviadoma who need that accumulated climbing to make the race hard, or Elisa Longo Borghini. It's probably better for someone like Mariana Voss, who she can get over those climbs, but she's not a pure puncher like Nuviadoma or Elisa Longo Borghini. So it did make a difference, I think, to this race, Benji, that route change.
Yep, I think so as well. And we resumed the race with about 45 kilometers left, roughly, is at least when I started watching. And the Kouwberg is coming up. And we do see that proactivity from Little Trek because they don't really have that rider here. They've got Balsamo, who is not in this race, if I recall correctly, because I didn't see her at least. Longo Borghini was here. Shirin van Anrooy, Spratt was here. They had a support here. Brody Chapman did not start the race. So the team is already kind of slightly impacted. And Then we do see them launching Elisa Longoborghini on the Kauberg, which is not the last Kauberg, with 40k to go. Kasia Niewiadoma following together with a teammate. Not sure what that teammate was. Amber Krag there, very strong again today. Anna Henderson also in the wheel. And then we see that SDWorks was sleeping. They're not here. There's a gap of 20 meters, and Vollering has to bridge it solo to get to the front. So she gets there, but that attack of those riders lost about 5 kilometers. There was a bit of a blockage on the road, as in the peloton blocked it up a little, but they came back eventually because teams were not involved. And it's all coming back together, 35k to go. That's where we get... Honestly, this race was really straightforward. With 34.9k to go, we get an attack by Eva van Acht, followed by Yara Kastelein and Ricarda Bauernfeind. So those three riders go up the road. Anushka Koster tries to jump towards it. Shaspatats in between for like 10 kilometers, so she never gets there. And from this point on, it's a game between three riders and the peloton behind. And there's a bit of a game of chicken behind, because the gap keeps growing to like a minute with 8 kilometers to go. And were you surprised to not see SDWorks, and at first not even Little Trek, really doing much to close it and kind of like bluffing while looking like they're panicking? Because Kopecky went to the front at a certain point, sat first rider in the peloton. I was like, come on, guys, work with me.
That was the strange part, is that why, if Vollering missed the initial move before when Trek attacked, Trek have already said, we got numbers, we're strong. And it's not like Van der Poel against Ineos in the men's race before we knew Van der Poel didn't have his best legs. Trek were the best team probably here. They were the best.
Yeah.
Elisa Longoborghini dropped everybody on the Paterberg and Tour of Flanders. She dropped Kopecky and co. And so I thought it was strange that SDWorks, took it upon themselves to pace. And Van Dijk Van Dijk helped a little bit, but then I think Shabby would go in the wheel and Van Dijk would just sort of stayed third wheel. And she wasn't gassed. And she was just let Kopecky keep pacing. I was like, I don't know why SDWorks. Maybe SDWorks wanted it to be a smoother run in. And we eventually saw maybe the answer for what Trek wanted to do, which was a huge lead out. Because the gap gets really big. It gets to a minute 11 or so. Yep. We even with 8 kilometers to go, it's still maybe 55 seconds with 7Ks to go. And then Trek go to the front with maybe Brand, but definitely Van Dijk. And they just start ripping it. Like, they just do a full lead out into the base of the Kauberg, and maybe that's what SDWorks sort of wanted to avoid, and Trek knew they had that in their back pocket. But still, Van Acht, who's like a second-tier GC rider, she's like a solid enough rider, like 18th in flesh. Yara Kastelein won a Tour de France stage last year, as did Bauernfeind. These are riders who have proven in the biggest race last year that they're not just going to collapse.
As we say in Dutch, these are not pancakes. These are solid riders, but reality is that this gap is still manageable, especially when Alan van Dijk is pushing it like a jackhammer in the peloton. And it was a full train of Little Trek there. I was like, where are they getting these riders? Because I thought they started with one less, etc. And they hammer it towards the Kauberg. We saw them moving up just before the descent of the Kauberg. Spratt moved up, Van Android moved up, but was struggling a bit in moving up. Longoborghini looked good in the wheel. But once we get to the Kauberg, in the distance, I see Longoborghini making a move, but it wasn't herself. She was responding to Kasia Niewiadoma, who... Kasia attacking on the Kauberg from the foot always happens, right? Every single year jumped, we see that. There was like a reverse lead-out vibe.
Trek tried to do a reverse lead-out to make Kasia or Voss or somebody or Vollering jump. And I was thinking, because Vibers was still there. Yeah. And now this is full 2020 hindsight. I'm not saying it's a legitimate tactic what they did, but you could have just put Spratt on the front to absolutely send it with ELB in her wheel for her to attack off that.
I think it was by accident, because they led into this final hairpin corner, whatever you call it, into the Kauberg with full speed. And I think the gap opened up in the corner because we saw Longoborghini. First, the second Domestique was still trying to close the rider that got away from Little Trek. And then Longoborghini went to a radio and was like, no, go, 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 or something. So I think it was an in-the-moment decision based on the gap that opened up in the corner, which if Longoborghini decides that, I'm fine with it. I probably would have given the lead out for Longoborghini because the Kauberg is too long. And you need that length.
Yeah,
you need Spratt, that length to get
Spratt
away.
She didn't actually make it across to the breakaway. She cracked halfway across to them. But yeah, Cash has already jumped at this point. And we look, Marianna Vos, she's glued to Elisa Longaborghini's wheel. And she's holding it pretty well. She's not slipping. ELB, yeah. I think, throws in maybe one dig. But Lorena Vibas is there. And in the end, there's no big move. There's no, I think, the only rider that tried to go again was Bauernfeind and Kastelein, who were the original breakaway participants, or not the early days breakaway, but that move. And they tried to go over the lip of the Kauberg. And they're not going anywhere, though.
Also, what can you do? Because, you know, Full Ring is going to be in this. You got to try it, for sure. But Full Ring reacts to everything that happens now. You've got Eva van Acht, who's still there, who didn't start spacing at the front together with another Visma rider. It's not even Vos. While Vibas and Vos are kind of out-positioned, is how I would describe it. Like in 10th position, Vos in the wheel of Vibas, and I was like, oh, Vibas is far. Oh, wait, is that Vos in a wheel? They're both far. But it's manageable far. It's also on the open side of the road, so they can move past people towards the sprint. They're also near the wheel of Longaborghini, who then decides to open it early, but we all knew it was going to be a 1v1 sprint once we realized it was going to be a sprint between two riders, eh?
Well, especially with Vollering there. Vollering just goes to the front, previous winner of this race, right? Or did Cavalli step off her? No, yeah.
She swept the other, yeah.
And when she goes to the front, you've had Capecchi, the world champion, working before. You've got, after the top of the Cowboy, you're Vollering on the front, and Vibas in the group. There's only, you know, it's going to be a sprint, and that's exactly what happens. Vollering leads it out. Vibas was very deep, which consequently meant that Vos was very deep, so Vibas had to move up quite a lot. It's not like she was getting the direct lead out from Vollering, but she eventually looks like she's going to win easily, opens up to the gap to the barriers, starts to celebrate with 20 meters or so to go, and Marianna Vos keeps pedaling, comes through the inside underneath her on the barriers, and nails the bike throw and wins. You wouldn't even need a photo finish for this. Mm-hmm. Like, yep. Vos wins, quote unquote, easily because Vibas posted up too early. What a shocker, Benji.
It's a shocker. And on one end, you'd say, oh, fuck, she didn't Alaphilippe. On one end, it's like, fuck. On one end, I'm like, fucking hilarious. Sorry, but I'm laughing my ass off watching stuff like that. But I'm also feeling like, okay, she probably won't sleep well tonight. So I feel bad on that. And it's like a combination of two feelings that I can't place. I will say, posting up by accident with a meter or two to go and then losing, okay, you can. But she posted up way too early, to the point that it comes over as, I don't blame her in that sense, but it comes over as arrogance that you think you can't be passed in the last 15 meters of a flat sprint on top of the Cowberry against loads of riders. That makes sense?
Yeah, it was really, it wasn't like, yeah, if she posted up just 5 meters later, she still wins. It's, I don't know why riders keep doing this. Coy did this in Almeria, and he nearly got beaten by Moschetti. And, you know, he held on, but I don't know why. And Alaphilippe, Benji, did it in Liège. He literally did it again the next race in Brabant. Yeah. And Van Aert did it in the Dauphiné 2022 ahead of behind Gaudu in the end. And it's, why are riders, you do know, right? The photographers can still get the photo shot of you posting up after the line. They can still get it. They're back far enough. So you don't need to do it before the line. And I agree. Like, if this was a rider's once in a lifetime opportunity, Alena Sierra or any other rider, not an SD Works or whatever, or Vos, to win like a big classic, I'd feel more bad for them. But Vibas makes more than most of the men in the peloton, and there's won a million races. So actually, I agree. I thought it was funny.
And in addition to that, I would say she was thinking so much about celebrating and the victory itself that she went off the barrier as well, which opened up the space where Vos came through in the first place. So her mind was not on getting the victory, it was already on having the victory, and that's where the mistake was made.
And yeah, she only looked over her right shoulder, and then Vos just snuck through. So
yeah,
I guess, like, SD Works tactics were really good up to that point, and if I was, I mean, Vollering, to be honest, I don't know, man. If I had... Vollering's the best rider in the world. And
well, she like last year she was, but I'll be honest, she's not looking shockingly dominant this year. So,
well, she has to ride as a domestique half the time, it seems. But yeah, in Tour of Flanders, she wasn't that good. But
hey,
yeah,
you have the world fit her better.
You have the world champion as a domestique for you. You have Vollering as a domestique for you. And then you do that. I think, yeah, they seem to be kind to her afterwards. But I won't say she won't do it again, because Alaphilippe did it in the next race. So Rise will do it again.
I think she won't do it again. I think for her, I'm confident to say she won't do it again. I think she won't sleep on this.
I think she'll post up too early again. She might not lose because of it, but I've seen her do this actually in other races this year, but she had a big enough gap and it was a high speed sprint, but I think she will do it again. They can't help it. Like, why did Alaphilippe do it in Brabant again? It's like, it's lunacy.
I don't fucking know.
He can't help it. but he won that anyway.
But Panache. He's the exception though. I haven't seen many people redo it after the first time.
Yeah, Coy better not ever do it again. He better learn his lesson.
But I feel like looking at both the men's and women's races,
I'll do
did
the top
I
10.
Learn something? Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
And the other podium finisher is Ingvild Agaskian on Liv Alula Jaco. Let's go, Ingvild. Let's go. I know Ingvild. She's a good rider.
She's good.
Yeah, she's Norwegian, 25 years old on Liv Alula Jaco. Biggest result of her career. And
not the last.
Yeah, hopefully not the last. She's been away on camp for ages. She's been, she's been training for ages. I think she's on altitude as well, maybe. She's definitely on a training camp. And Liv Alula Jaco have been really, really good this year.
Didn't she get a really decent result in 2022 where we were like, oh, that's her or something? I swear at a certain moment in the last years, I was like, now I know who you are.
I think she got a decent punchy sprint on her. Like, I don't know. It was a Tour de Suisse uphill sprint, Balsamo one. She was there sixth. But yeah, I think she's just still finding her way, and she's got a lot of, I wish she'd been, she hasn't done that many race days. So maybe the Cobble Classics aren't for her. She's not that big, but yeah, I'm keen to see how she goes for the rest of the year. And yeah, I can't remember if Jaco Alula, Liv Jaco Alula podiumed a World Tour Classic like this year or not. But certainly a big result for them. So shout out to Ingvild.
I don't know how close she got in those races.
Did. I think she was like fourth.
Third in Dwarst, fourth in Ronde van Drenthe, and ninth in Dwarst
was top pro for women, though.
Yeah, correct.
So, anyway. Five for Georgie, fourth. Elisa Longo-Borghini, fifth for Trek. Gasparini, sixth. Mulman, seventh. Krach, eighth. Kastelein from the breakaway.
Yeah.
Ninth. Paladin, tenth. Van Anroy, 12th. That's the top 10.
We're saying from the breakaway, but technically it's kind of the anticipation phase of the race where they get away. It just feels like a breakaway because we're just after the neutralization of the race. But I really enjoyed watching this race. It was really fun. Did it have an impact that was neutralized? For sure. For sure it has an impact, especially on SD Works and how they act there. Wibbs, though, very versatile. Again, showing off. I really enjoyed this. Did it worry me that Vollering falling into domestique role? Does it say something about her form? No, but this is not the first time that I feel like SDWorks was surprised by Little Trek's move on a very obvious place, which they should be getting right in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, like, I don't want to be too harsh on them. They have a good classic season, but...
Yeah.
Van Anroy and ELB finishing 5th and 12th, you think... Could they have done something to avoid a sprint, do you think?
No.
Yeah, sorry.
You can.
The shortened race sucked for them.
Yep. But also, maybe that move on the last Kauberg wasn't the right decision, but you try it and it doesn't work. You can't. It's an on-the-go tactical decision. It's not maybe like their pre-planned tactic failed.
Maybe it would have baited Voss or Wiebes to panic and close Sprat. You don't know exactly what your competitors are going to do.
Yeah.
But yeah. The Voss. I think this is her best season since 2021 so far. Yeah. Like, she was, according to PCS ranking, she wasn't in the top 20 last 2 years, and now she's won three races, including Omloop Amstel and Dwars Duur. Like, yes, Wiebes was going to win, but she didn't. And yeah, it's good to see Voss back, because Trek have improved and SD Works maybe have come down a bit. So we really have, like, apart from poor Cassia, you know, this was her moment maybe, but
yep.
We got different teams that can really win. What have we got? Oh yeah, but that's Amstel Gold race, Benji. Yeah, you're gonna say did you learn anything from a young gun here apart from Ingvild?
No, like, I do like seeing the young guns pop up, but I didn't necessarily learn something for the next week and a half, if that makes sense. I still have the same feeling that I had at Brabant, so where Little Trek is very strong as a team. There's terrain in LBL to really push that. In Flesh Wallon, I would like to see Little Trek anticipate on the Mur de Huys that come before the last one, because they changed the parkour and inserted multiple Mur de Huys, right? With the women's as well?
I think so. Let me whip up the parkour for you.
Or did I make that up?
For the women, they have two Mur de Huys, yep. 1.3k is
9.5%. It was a bit meh.
143k's Hilly before, but yeah.
Give them seven.
If they had seven, who would win? Castellan, maybe.
The more anticipation, the better it is for them.
Who have you got for Flesh? Men and women's.
I think...
Oh, we could do it in the weekly show tomorrow. We'll do it in the weekly show tomorrow. I'll let you dwell on it.
No spoilers. No spoilers.
Okay. Is there any other orders of business? Oh, the weekly show. I will do Tour de Doob just because it finished today. Lenny Martinez wins again ahead of Clément Berthe. And that's his fifth pro win and one,
yeah.
two, three, fourth win this year. Admittedly, not a World Tour level, but still, like, Lenny keeps winning, and he scored 924 UCI points, the 20-year-old. So he is some talent. And yeah, Lenny just keeps on winning, and Godou won yesterday and Lenny won on Friday. So
There's two lessons from these races, and it's that Groupama keeps winning and Burgos keeps getting close positions and UCI points, because they got third and fourth as well again today after Langelotti did really well in the previous races. So, hey, that's the other thing I've noted. But
and Aaron Gate.
He's existing.
Do you know where he's been? He's been at... They did the Oceania Champs around my old training loop, around when I was training a lot around Mogul and north of Ipswich, and they had the Oceania Champs around Mount Crosby loops around, and Larry Lactate won the men's road race, but Aaron Gate, I think, scored 200.
Larry Lactate, you got to be, is that actually his name?
On Strava, yeah.
Okay. That Larry, makes sense. That's Larry Strava
Lactate,
name.
Larry Lactate won, and Burgos sent old Gate back 220 UCI points in, across the TT and the road race. Thanks for coming. He won the TT in Oceania. So pretty smart from Burgos. Some of their signings late at the end of 2023, they're paying dividends, whereas Astana's less so. I think they sent... Who did Astana send to the African champs?
What's his name? Oh, the guy that went to Oman or Saudi. Oh God!
Yeah, Henock went to African Games, 250 UCI points for the winner. By the way, which is the same as winning like
Igor Chan Asian Games.
Did he win?
I think he did. Right, he's wearing that special jersey, if I recall.
But Henock came 53rd, so that was a wasted trip. Oh. what they would have wanted. He won the African Conti Champs last year. So Burgos doing quite well in that aspect. Whereas, what's your man, Igor Chan?
I don't know, man.
I'm looking through. I've never opened this guy's PCS before, I got to say. He came 43rd. Brzezinski, Gleb, and Gidic won. Do you reckon Fedorov's good?
I mean, do you reckon?
Yeah, do you think Fedorov's like a good rider?
Not on most races, but he did get 14th at Paris-Roubaix.
That was a result as well. And then he still won the U23 World Champs. I know he was 20, you know, the last year of U23, but he still won it. Like, Fedorov's actually, he's not bad. But Astana
are. But he's not great either.
He's also not great, but he's not bad. I actually think that...
Whenever I see, like, Velon, let's be honest about it, Velon's kind of dead. But they have this road code app thing that I hear no one using. So I'm probably giving them more promotion by saying the words than they deserve. But I saw like Astana promoting a video that they made, Star of the Future or something, Fedorov, and I'm like, what?
I think you're being too mean on poor old Fedorov.
14th at Roubaix is good, but man, you're not going to step up to top five.
Who knows? I mean, 14th on Astana at Roubaix, though.
Ah, that's the big thing. I'm not, I don't
and
feel
Lushenko's
it. Lushenko
is flying. I don't know. Anyway, we'll talk about the what's in. We've got to do Giro Abruzzo tomorrow in the weekly show. We've got a lot to talk about. I shouldn't have spoken about this. I understand, but I just can't help myself sometimes. Okay, I hope you enjoyed the Amstel recaps. Thanks to Join Cycling for supporting the show, and we'll see you with our weekly show tomorrow sometime. Till then, ciao.